Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Being the first Black woman to be in the mainstream press as a cartoonist, I kind of felt like I was, they're like, you broke down the door. I was like, I broke down the door and then I stood in the doorway. I was like, because there I was. And they weren't about to take another Black woman cartoonist, you know. We already have Barbara, you know. And you feel like, wow, it's not all good. It kind of stinks.
I'm Jordan Kistner, and you're listening to Thresholds, a weekly series of free-ranging conversations with writers and artists about moments of epiphany or transformation that changed their lives and their work. A moment that they stepped across, like a threshold, into something new, and the way that experience changed everything they wrote afterwards. Quick note, I, Jordan, am taking a brief break from hosting this spring to work on some other projects. And while I am off mic, we are really lucky to have Mira Jacob occupying the interviewer seat. Mira is a novelist, a graphic memoirist, and an all-around brilliant mind and excellent conversationalist. She was our very first Thresholds guest, and I have never stopped wanting to listen to her talk. I also was excited by who she wanted to talk to for these shows. I'll be back later in the spring, but until then, Mira's got the host mic.
Barbara Brandon Croft is the creator of the comic strip Where I'm Coming From, and she became the first nationally syndicated African-American female cartoonist. She also did a slew of other things while doing this, lived a life in which she said yes, time and time again, to so many things, that bubbled up over the entirety of this interview. And in this time where I feel like so many of us are told that we have to be really, really good at one thing and just hone our practice, and that is, in fact, something I have done, there's something so incredible about hearing from somebody who is just willing to try it all and iterate over and over again, never done, never not curious about what the next iteration will bring.
I went to see if I could get a job at a magazine called Elan, and I took a portfolio. I took my writing samples I was a fashion reporter from Retail News, and I didn't know what I could do for them, but I wanted them to hire me. So I was like, I will do anything you need. I even have a portfolio because I draw. And the Marie Brown, who is the editor-in-chief, who's this iconic literary agent now, asked me, she's like, well, you draw and you're funny. Maybe you can do a comic strip. And I was like, and I walked out of that place a new person, because I was like, you know what? I know I can do that. I've seen it done all my life. And my life would have taken a whole nother turn had I not had that experience.
Did she know that your father was a cartoonist, or was it something that she was just putting together on the spot where she's like, you have these wonderful drawings and you're hilarious?
You know, I often question that. I haven't had a chance to ask her, because in my head, she did not know. But also, I know my dad had a certain level of fame. He was one of the pioneer Black cartoonists, and he was in a paper in New York. Well, it was the Long Island paper, so maybe she didn't. I really honestly don't know.
I mean, either way, it's right. It's not as though it's a given, right? That just because your father can do something, you can also do it. I mean, my father's a heart surgeon and nobody would ever want me near their heart.
Exactly. But also, you know, in looking at it that way, also, if my dad had been a truck driver and somebody said, you think you can do a comic strip? I might not have said yes. You know, it was something about having that role model, you know, made it all come together. For the longest, I had no idea. I had no real direction. I was just doing things I liked.
So you hadn't, for example, tried your own comic strip before this?
No. I mean, when I was a kid, my friend Leslie and I, you know, we're 7 years old, 6 years old. I've known her since I was four. But we used to come up with little books, you know, like, and the comics were like, have you ever seen a toilet bowl? And it's like, you drew this toilet at a bowling alley, you know, it's like, come on. I would actually say, no, I've never tried cartooning before. But, you know, as a kid, I did try some things.
So when that happens, right, someone says to you, can you draw a comic? Have you ever thought about this? And what you said, yes, I can.
I did. I said yes immediately. And then I walked out and said, wow, I just said I was going to do something that I've never done. And I came home. I was still living at home. I was one of those. And my dad was like,
wait, one of those? Wait, when we say one of those, we mean a person that went to live at home after they got out of school?
Yes.
Okay. Like, there go we all. Yes, go on.
So I came home and I said, Dad, they said that they wanted me to come up with a comic strip for their magazine. And he's like, well, by this time he had built a studio in the basement. He said, go down there and work on some ideas. And that's what I did. And it took me weeks and weeks, a little too long apparently, because by the time I had something that I was prepared to show, I called up and is that when the magazine folded? I mean, before I had a chance to be published, the magazine folded.
What?
So yes, yes. So here I had this idea that I thought was great. And, you know, she thought it was great. She said it. She's like, oh, do some more. And that's how it went. I brought it in after weeks and she said, I like these. Can you do more? We can see how we can paste it in the magazine over the year. And I was like, sure. And I came back and I did, you know, a total of 10, I think. And, brought them in or called to make an appointment. And they said, I guess you didn't hear that magazine folded. I was like, oh. I was like, oh no.
What?
Yes.
Oh no.
So this is 1982. So I'm like, so I had this comic strip and I had nowhere to have it on display. And that's when I called Essence. And I was like, sending it to them. I sent them the very same package that I put together.
So, okay, wait, let's back up a minute.
Okay.
Let's talk about when you say these, and you have to come up with a comic strip. What do you come up with?
So my idea was, I knew my audience was Black women, primarily. It was a Black women's magazine. And I was like, maybe I can have just characters talking directly to the reader. And I'm going to say that I stole that from Pfeiffer because that's what I did. I loved Jules Pfeiffer. And I used to read that in the Village Voice. And, I liked the idea when he didn't always do this, but on occasion he would have the character speak directly to the reader. And I thought that was great. So I kind of stole that. And I just decided I wanted to have these talking heads. And it was called Where I'm Coming From because it was where this particular character was coming from. And my idea was to have a different character. I didn't have it like how it ultimately became, you know, these nine characters. I was going to have a different character every time I did the strip. That was my plan. So here's this woman talking about what's on her mind. And you don't know much about her. You know, you're just talking to her. She's not in an environment. You don't know where she lives. You don't know what her size is. You don't know anything about her. You just know what's going on in her head. And that was the idea. And they're like, oh, we like it. And when I started, it was just floating heads. It wasn't even hands.
Okay.
I only added those later because I could, to add, you know, how you feel. You know, I'm trying to say, No, this is. I was just to make that to be more. I can't think of the word.
Expressive.
But expressive. That's a simple word. Come on, Barbara. I wanted to use the hands to make them more expressive. I could exaggerate their feelings through their hands.
I mean, I also have to say, as a brown person, I feel like brown and black people talk halfway through their hands as yes. well, right?
Yes, yes. That's how you're going to understand really what we mean, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. I mean, I always call it my ethnic hands, which are constantly, you know, flailing across the table at people. But okay, so, and I've seen these comics and they are really beautiful. One of the things that is so captivating about them is they are heads and hands. And usually they feature two women talking to each other,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's usually a conversation between two women.
Yeah.
And so you come up with this idea that it's going to be, you think it's going to be this constantly changing, it's constantly going to be two different characters or
no,
is that?
Initially, I was just going to have that one character. So it was going to be where I'm coming from, this one character talking. It evolved into having them talk to each other. But I still wanted to keep that same intimacy, you know, like as if you're eavesdropping on their conversation. You know, they're just talking to each other and the reader is eavesdropping instead of being talked to directly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know something about that. Yep.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, so you go to Essence with this.
Yes.
And what happens there?
So I send it. And I get the initial response was like, this is good. And we have these meetings every Monday, I think it was, where we talk about what changes we might do in the magazine. So like every Monday I was calling. I was like, did you talk about doing a comic strip yet? You know, and ultimately I did that for weeks. And ultimately I was told that while they liked it, they did not think it fit their editorial makeup at that moment in time. And they were like, so you're not making it as a cartoonist? What do you do? And I was like, well, I'm a fashion reporter. And it just turned out that their fashion and beauty writer was pregnant and getting ready to go on maternity leave. And they asked me if I wanted to take a test for that job, you know, just to come in for 4 months. And I said, yeah, I do. I said, even though I know nothing of beauty, nothing. And they're like, we can teach you. I was like, okay. And I took the test and they liked it. And I got the gig for 4 months. So I quit my job. Of course, that's what you do. You're going to do this for 4 months and everything's going to be fine. And as it turned out, it was fine. I was there for 5.5 years.
Wow.
As the fashion and beauty writer. And I got to travel. I met so many great people. There's so many smart women that work at Essence. I made a lot of good friends. You know, it was all good.
Wait, can I just to back up for a second? So you go for your first interview at Elan and you show them, this is the kind of writing I can do. And they say, can you be a cartoonist? Right.
Yes.
So you come up with a bunch of cartoons and then you go to Essence with your cartoons and you say, here are what I have. I have all these cartoons. And they're like, that's great. Can you write for us?
Yes. That's exactly how it went. That's funny.
That's amazing. It's also really interesting that both times you just said yes.
I say yes all the time. I fall into all kinds of jobs and gigs.
Oh,
all
let's
the time.
Go. Okay, tell me about that.
I mean, if somebody says, you know, I guess I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, and that is that when you start being published, you know, you have to have a lot of papers to make it as a living. So I needed to do other jobs. So somebody would say, you know, because I knew people in the industry, this photographer needs an assistant. Can you think you could do that? It's like, yes. I had never been a photographer's assistant. And then I'd be like a second assistant. So really I was like taking care of the studio, making sure people had coffee when they needed it, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, holding up a reflector. But I worked at sample sales. I worked behind the scenes of fashion shows. And that's just because of the people that I knew or that I was introduced to. So, you know, for years, I loved doing being behind the scenes as you're like an assistant to the stage manager. And so, you know, basically, I think I call this model herders. You're like, you're making sure the model is in line for the next person needs to go down. Okay, have them in line.
Model herders.
That's what I was. I was a model herder. And so many things. I'm trying to think of some other things. But I would do anything that somebody said. I just say, yes, I can do that.
And wait, Barbara, you said you get something in a few papers and you've got to make a living. So does this mean that the comic had been picked up?
Yeah. By that time, well, you know what? I got the one newspaper. I got Detroit Free Press. That's one paper.
Okay.
And that's while I was working at Essence. And I was like, I'm going to be a cartoonist. And I quit. I was like, my mom was like, are you crazy? What about health insurance? I was like, eh. You know, it's like, I'm going to be a cartoonist. You cannot make it on one paper. So I was out of a job, but I was making $75 a week with my comic strip, and I was a professional cartoonist. And not only that, I had broken the color line. I was now the first Black woman to be in the mainstream press newspaper.
Wow.
I just knew things are going to go fine. That's when I tried to get a syndicate because I knew I needed that too. And I wouldn't have known that without my dad. He was syndicated, and I just knew that about the business.
Wait, so how did that go?
Well, I knew that when you have, what syndicates do is they're basically your agent. They go out and sell your comic to all these newspapers, and they already have relationships with these newspapers. And they send press kits on these comic strips they're trying to sell. So I put together a press kit on my comic strip, and I sent it to the syndicates. And I kind of dared them. I was like, hey, you haven't had any new Black cartoonists in a long time, and you never had a Black woman. What's happening? You know, here, I have a strip. I am published. Here it is. You know, I kind of called them out.
Yeah.
And they rejected me. except for Universal Press Syndicate. And Lee Salem, I miss him so. He passed away, but he was my advocate, man. He was like, he was the editorial director, and he liked it. And gave me a development deal. So I was doing it for Detroit. I was doing what other jobs I could do.
So when you got rejections, mm-hmm. let me just ask you, when yeah. you got rejections, mm-hmm. did they tell you why they were rejecting them?
Well, at least four or five of them were just kind of form letters. They're like, oh, thanks for sending this. You know, we don't like it enough, or, you know,
I hate the form rejection. Okay, all right.
Yeah, but I did get a really nice long one from King Features. And they told me why. And some of why was that, you know, we don't think we can sell this because you just have women. You just have Black women. You just have heads. You need environments. You need bodies. You need to make it a daily. You need to change it, basically. And I was like, okay. Thank you, but, you know, I appreciate you telling me why and taking time to write, you know, a page and a half why it's not going to work. And I had, you know, Universal Press in my pocket. You know, they were already saying, yeah, we like this. We think we're going to go ahead with this.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. They gave me a development deal. And
okay.
That's when, King Features did come back. Because once somebody wants you, you know, the person
yes.
who rejected you wants to come back.
And I'm yes. like,
yeah, it happens all the time in so many forms. You know, I took a lunch, had a nice lunch. I knew I was sticking with Universal Press, but I didn't go with King. It's a huge, old syndicate and could have been, you know, might have been nice, but Universal got me off uh-huh. the bat, you know? So I was like, there's no way I'm jumping ships. No way. Yeah.
And so you have this out, right? You're doing, and are you still working other jobs, or you're now you're like, no, I'm full-time cartoonist. This is what I can do.
So I get in the one paper. I quit Essence. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, maybe I do need a job. And so I threw out some resumes, And I ended up working at Women's Wear Daily as a features editor, fashion features editor.
Wow.
And yeah, and you know, this is very shallow of me, but I always wanted to be able to say I worked at Women's Wear Daily. I thought that was cool.
I mean, that is cool. I would do the same thing. That's a pretty cool thing. Also, I love that these are like the side jobs that you're failing upward in such a spectacularly amazing way.
It is kind of wild when you think about it.
Yeah.
oh, man. But, so here I am at Women's Wear Daily, you know, 6 weeks in, the syndicate said, okay, I had been doing that development deal. And they said, okay, we're going to go with you. We are going to start selling it. And I got two newspapers. I can't remember where they were. They were Middle America. And I was like, now I quit again. It's like, I've got three papers. I'm quitting. This is me. I'm going to be a cartoonist. And, you know, that time it worked out. I mean, I still had to do jobs, but it was on my own terms, you know, working at a sample sale, you work for a week and then you're off, you know, it's a seasonal thing, you know, you work and don't work. So I was doing things like that because again, three papers aren't enough. And actually I don't live that large. So when it was, there was a period of time when I could just do the comic strip. It was a weekly. It was doing two strips every other week. And, you know, that gave me a lot of space. You know, I had a lot of space to do other jobs. And there were times that I didn't have to hustle as hard, you know, because I had, I don't know, I was going into the 60s, number of papers in the 60s. And I was like, okay, I don't have to hustle. I can just do this. And then they start to decline and you start hustling again.
So if you have something going into 60-ish papers, is that what you were just saying?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Do you start hearing from people about the comic? Do you start getting an idea of how people are receiving it at that point?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I started hearing back from people when I was in one paper in Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of it was really favorable and encouraging. You know, women saying, oh, you said just what I was thinking. You know, this is exactly how I felt about that, you know. And, you know, that was really encouraging. And I was like, oh, good. This is good. But, you know, you also get the folks are like, why are you anti-men? You know, I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Wait, were you anti-men just because
I'm a woman.
Women?
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I mean, the comic strip features women, right?
Yes.
Does it feature any men?
No. You only see women. You hear men. So like they may be on the phone with a guy.
Yeah.
But like I'll just say that somebody wrote me and said that I was anti-men. And I was like, well, if you really notice what I do is I talk about a specific man, you know, like so, you know, Jackie's boyfriend was Victor, you know. Sonia's boyfriend was Kenny, you know, Cheryl's boyfriend was Maurice. So, and then, you know, if I talked about other men, I'd use names mostly, you know, I wouldn't say all men do this, all men do that. So I wrote him back and I said, if you'd notice, I'm talking about a specific man who did this and this is how this woman responded to it. Now, if you see yourself in the man, not the men, but the man I was talking about, then I don't think you have a problem with me. I think it's your mirror. You know, it's like,
oof, yes.
You know, it's yes. Like, it's not me.
I love this. Okay, so you write that. Did you ever hear back from?
No.
I love it. From Mr. pointing the finger directly at himself. He just didn't hear it. He was like, oh.
Clap back.
Oh, God, I hope you got into therapy. Anyway, I mean, you really, that was like free therapy, by the way. Thank you for your service. Amazing. Okay, so you start to hear back from people. You're getting feedback. It's at 60 papers, then I imagine you're hearing a bit more. What years are we in now?
So when I was, this is the 90s when I was getting in the most papers. So
wow.
I would say, you know, I got a lot of fanfare. I got a lot of attention from, you know, the publicity. I mean, like, got a lot of publicity or the media paid a lot of attention to me when I first started, because, you know, you become the first, and that's, you know, people want to talk about it. I think that grew the amount of papers because I got all this notice. And then so from 92 to, 97, I was going pretty strong, and I would get a lot of letters. I'm not even going to say a lot, because what is a lot now? You know, now when you can just, pull out your phone and, start the thumbs going, yep. People are just going to, it's just a knee-jerk reaction, because clearly when I was doing stuff, if people really felt that strongly, which was very, when they sent positive things, that was a good thing, because it took effort to do that. You had to find the paper and the pen and the stamp.
Absolutely. And the envelope.
And the envelope, good Lord. And find a mailbox,
What is that? About being the first?
Sure.
Because I'm always really interested in this. So I'm Indian American. I do graphic work as well, and I do novels, but I'm part of what is sort of the first part of the diaspora in America. And I'm often told by people in those rooms and in those situations, oh, you're the first. And I found it to be at first I took great pleasure in it. And then after a while, it really started to grate on me for different reasons. But I'm curious about your experience of being the first. What was that like for you?
I hear you, because it is complicated. I liked, the idea of being the first. I mean, something about, your place in history, I guess. I like history. And that's something that can't be taken away from me, because you're the first, and so there you are. But I did a strip early on about how it's exciting but upsetting. It's like all these things are it's like a double-edged sword, because the end of the thing, she goes with all these things about it being so great and so bad that I'm the first Black person, and it's this day and age, I'm the first Black person to do this, and I actually reran that strip 10 years later, and
wow.
It still worked. Still worked. And I found, going back through my dad's stuff, because, my dad was prolific, but I saw that he did a early Luther where that same, it did the same thing, being the first Black something, how good and bad that is. And I was like, wow. Me and my dad talking about the same thing so many years apart. That happens a lot. But to your point about my feeling about being the first, so I did feel that complicated way of, good and bad, and, happy and ashamed, that this was the case. But on top of that, I felt like being the first Black woman to be in the mainstream press as a cartoonist, I kind of felt like I was... they're like, you broke down the door. I was like, I broke down the door, and then I stood in the doorway. I was like, because there I was. Mm. And they weren't about to take another Black woman cartoonist. We already have Barbara, And you feel like, wow, this is this kind of, it's not all good. It kind of stinks, I mean, I know that when they were trying to sell my strip, they would say, we already have Kathy. We don't need Where I'm Coming From. I'm like, what?
Because women.
Those women, we got one already. We don't need another one. and the same thing with, Black comic strips. My dad went through it. We already have Wee Pals. We don't need Luther, and I got it. We already have Curtis. We don't need Where I'm Coming From. So I was well aware of the fact that even though I broke down the door, I was standing in the way for more.
Yeah.
For while I was there.
Yeah. It's an incredible thing, right? To have somebody look at you as yours is the experience. This is the experience. We now have the experience of all of you, right? All of the yous that you could possibly be, because now we've experienced one of you. Therefore, exactly. You will speak for all of you.
Exactly. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I did a strip like that one of those times. It was, I think it had to do with something going on. I don't know. It could have been Mike Tyson or O.J. Simpson. Something was going on, something big. And a newscaster stopped. You know, she's talking about how a newscaster was on the road and said, "Tell us, how do black women feel about this situation?" And she's like, "I don't know all black women." how do I know?
I don't speak for all black women.
I cannot, you know. I've got nine characters, and that's not all. You know, that's, you know, come on.
But you have nine. Are you sure that's not all? Oh, okay. So you have this strip, and it's going out, and it's in the 90s.
Yes.
And people are having their reactions to it, and you are both representing yourself and, as you said, you know, opening the doorway and standing in it.
Yeah.
And then where do you go from there?
Yeah, where do you go from there? So I just kept plugging, you know, I kept doing what I wanted, you know, what I was doing. And as newspapers started diminishing, and we actually, as the cartoon, you know, all the cartoonists at the syndicate got a letter, not an email, an actual letter that said, you know, newspapers are dying out and we don't know how sustainable this is going to be.
Wow.
Cartoonists. So they kind of, and that was early on. That was in the early 90s when they were saying that. And it was true. So like by the, you know, 2000s, fewer papers were happening and I was needing to do some more work and, my friend Ruth Manuel Logan, who I used to work with at Essence, was now a research director at, I think, Women's Day. And she taught me all about fact-checking and how to fact-check. And I started doing those gigs. I would go from magazine to magazine fact-checking.
Amazing.
By now there was the internet. So, you know, I could look things up. And I know how to find a reliable source, you know. Because you can't just say I can found it on the internet. But, you know, firsthand, you know, I knew how to work it. And again, the papers were diminishing. And I ended up getting a gig at Parents Magazine, which was perfect because by this time I'm married and I have a kid, a baby. And I'm fact-checking at Parents Magazine. I'm telling you, Chase, that's my son, would not have known Santa Claus like he did if I hadn't worked at Parents. I got so many freebies. I got toys. He was a toy tester. It was great.
What? That's a thing? He was a toy tester? Thing.
Yes. He wanted to grow up and become a toy tester. Yes. He was a toy tester at 9. Yeah.
That's the sweetest gig a kid has ever had in life.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. But So again, something fell into my, you know, can you do some fact check? It's like, yes, I can do that. So I fell into that and the papers started diminishing and I knew with a syndicate in your contract that says if your papers fall below whatever the number is, then we can stop distributing you or you can say, I want to stop because this isn't worth it to me. Yeah. And I like to think it's because he liked what I was doing and he was the editorial director. He kept me on for longer than he had to, you know? So, but we did have that lunch where, you know, he said, okay, so now we're going to stop. But do you want to do something? You know, how about another one? How about a daily, you know, and he gave me another development deal and, I came up with something I thought was kind of cute. But, you know, I wasn't feeling it through and through like I was with Where I'm Coming From. And they said, we're going to pass. You know, you can try it somewhere else. And I didn't take it any further. And, yeah, by now I was the research director at Parents. I wasn't just a freelancer. You know, I kept moving up.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm like, how does this even happen? I don't know.
I love that you are so baffled by how this, like, you are the most versatile sounding human in the world where things come at you and you're like, I could try that. Why not? I'll do that. You're like, how is this happening? It's happening because you're like there with both hands being like, why don't I try this?
That's the way I felt. That's the way I do. That's just how life comes to me and I just take it. I was like, this is good.
Amazing. I love, I mean, it's like manna from heaven to even hear this, because it just feels like if that's the way you're moving through the world, then there are so many possibilities, yeah, right?
You think. Yeah.
Well, because I think one of the things that I often worry about, I don't know if this even gets to you, but one of the things I worry about is if I can't be a success in this thing that I have put it all in, then will I ever be happy? And then corresponding with that also, by the way, is the success doesn't necessarily take away that nervousness, right? Yeah, success is like, this is just now. Yeah. And what about in 3 years? So it's this never ending chase for a kind of success in a career where you can't really measure your worth in that way. And yet I'm prone to doing it. And it doesn't sound like you are.
I don't look at it like that, I don't think. You know,
tell me how you look at it.
I look back on it and I'm like, wow, that was pretty hip. You know, that happened. But I've always been pretty open to what's coming up. And, you know, even now, honestly, and I had to teach myself again. I had to call on, you know, a lot of times people say, what would you tell your younger self? I was like, you know what? I would like my younger self to talk to me, because my younger self was so sure and didn't worry about anything. I was a freelancer, you know, basically, because I'm living off of newspapers and freelance for 15 years. I didn't have health insurance even. And my mom was mortified. You know, it's like, you have to have health insurance. And even people would say to me, how did you not have health insurance for 15 years? Didn't you get sick? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't go to the doctor. I could have been sick. But I don't know if I was or not. I don't think I was, but that's the way I lived. And I don't know. So I was going to say that even now. So I was working at Parents Magazine, and a digital company bought the magazine. And they're like, oh, well, that's fine. We love print. You know, we're not doing anything, at least for 60 days. And then, you know, day 61, we're going to get rid of the print. And they got rid of the entire staff. That's the first time, again, I'm without a gig, a job, you know. So, and now I'm older, and now I have health stuff. You know, I started out with, you know, at 64, you have health things that need to be maintained, you know, and things like that. So it's important to have health insurance. So you have to figure out how to manage that. And then I wish that younger one would, I'm trying to train myself to say, you know what, don't worry so much. Something is going to happen. Don't even think that you know what the next thing is, because maybe you don't, you know, just open yourself up to the next thing that happens. And, you know, be ready to grab it if it, you know, suits you.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I have to ask you, so you had this in the beginning when we were first talking, you had this moment of walking into an interview and having them ask you to do something totally different, but something that you're like, okay, let me try that. What is the strangest job you have done just because you've been open to doing whatever comes up?
Huh. Let's think. Because I've done some strange ones.
I know. I mean, so have I. I mean, I'm thinking like when I first moved to the city, one of the one that always comes to my mind is I hula hooped in Central Park in a bikini to give businessmen the clue on a scavenger hunt. I mean, it was like the whole thing was like insulting and mortifying. However, I was somehow paid $50 an hour and I thought this was like amazing. And now that when I look back on it, I'm like, how did this happen and why did you agree to it? But whatever, I was also like 22 and I was like, I'm making real money.
$50 an hour.
$50 an hour, I know. I was like, God only knows how many ramen that will buy. But but what was something for you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I because they didn't seem so strange at the time. And I'm like, I guess if I look back, maybe some things were strange. Because, you know, working sample sales, that's strange. Working at warehouses, you know, packing up clothes to send to the place where you're setting up a store, you know, run, you know, being a salesperson, all those kind of things. You'd run into strange people, but that's not a strange job. It's working behind, you know, at fashion shows. That's not everybody gets to do that, and that's kind of not strange, but it's different.
I mean, model herder is pretty different, I have to say.
Yeah, being a model herder was pretty different. And you know, at that time, well, they're supermodels now, but I remember Michael Kors always had, I love his clothes, but he always had the superstars, supermodel stars, or whatever they call them. They would be like, let Barbara talk to that one because she's not very nice. And I'm like, me?
Wait, were you the model whisperer?
I was the model whisperer and a herder. Yes.
I think that counts. I think that counts as pretty strange.
Yes, yes.
If you could go back to that person who is about to go into that interview, or maybe the person who came out of the interview, okay? The person who came out of the interview. If you could go back to that girl as who you are now, would you have any advice for her?
No, I want her to give me advice. she had it going on. She was so sure, and she was so confident, and she did not have a care or a worry. She did not hold on to any of that kind of, you know, insecurity. So she does not need to hear from me at all. I need to hear from her.
So I know that you started writing the comic again, right?
Yes, yes.
In 2016, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so can you tell me about how that came about?
Yes. I was thinking it was done. I was done with doing that. It was something that happened in my past. And again, I could say, well, you can't take that away from me. That is something I did. And I was very involved with, you know, family. And it takes up a lot of time. And by now, my job had gotten increasingly, I don't want to say difficult, but, you know, fact-checking is no joke. It's, I'm managing fact-checkers, you know, and I'm taking responsibility for what goes in the magazine. And this is going out to women and men who are trying to figure out how to, you know, raise their kids. This is no small gig. So it was very consuming. I let myself feel it that way. And so there was this one woman, Tara Nakashimaya Donahue, and she's like, hey, I want to do a show with women illustrators. Can I get you to be a part of it? And I was like, I haven't done anything, you know? And she was like, you don't have to do anything. I can use what you've done already. I was like, okay. Another time, I'm like, okay. I feel like, what's his name? Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live. Okay. Mm-hmm.
For life, yeah.
So she started it, you know, and then she kept encouraging me to, she's like, well, you can do it again if you want to. She's like, and I talk about this in the book, but she's like, how about if I scan some of your old stuff and take out the words and you figure, you know, you could use that to make new words, you know, like, and I was like, well, that's interesting. And so she gave it to me and I never did it. And then I was like, okay.
Okay.
I see this clown coming down a escalator talking about running for president. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then that said clown won the presidency, and there was no holding me back. You know, I was like, I have to comment on this. I don't have a venue, but I do have to comment on this. And that's the first one I did. And it's, you know, it's Lakeisha, the one with the dreads, and she's like, you know, America put white supremacy on the ballot. Look what happened, you know. And, you know, the hashtag at the bottom is Obama backlash. And I did that on the job because I came home and showed my family, and my son was like, when'd you do that? I was like, at work, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I have a busy job. There I am doing this. But I used the same things that Tara gave me, you know, the strips without the words. And I found something that worked with what I wanted to say. And then, you know, since then, there's been so many crazy things that I just can't help but put it out there. So, you know, I have Facebook. I put it on Facebook, and then somebody said, you should put it on Instagram. And I was like, okay, again, okay. Uh-huh. So I put it on Instagram. And so that's how I got back into it. It's just the I couldn't believe what was going on, and I needed to have to make some comments about what was happening. It's because it's really kind of scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, it seems like those characters, I mean, how long was it between when you had had let the comic strip go and then when you started writing again?
So let's see, it's 2005. And then I started again in 2016.
So 11 years.
Okay, good. I was like, I can't do the math. Still mourning.
So did those voices, I'm so curious about this always with people's art, did those voices go dormant in those 11 years? Because I know it really just sounds like it was more of a supply and demand thing. It was more of a newspapers go out of business, therefore this comic strip, we can't do it anymore. But did those voices actually go dormant in you in that time?
No. I would still have a lot of opinions about what was going on in the world. But I voiced them to, you know, my family and my friends. I did not use putting them down on paper and processing what I'm thinking through the characters anymore. And once I did it again in 2016, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how good this is. This is fun, you know? And it's fun to have their expressions, work with their expressions on how they feel about certain things. And it's fun to talk directly to an audience again. And you know, you put it on Facebook, you have nothing but friends on Facebook. So everybody loves it. Oh, it's great. But actually, some of it's really quite good. And I think, you know, if I break my arm, pat myself on the back.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of it, and I was so pleased when I asked Drawn In Quarterly if they would include some of my post-syndication strips in the book. And because I knew they wanted to do the syndicated strips. And they agreed. And I was able to put in, you know, there's a couple of spreads of my after. And you could see, I think I have a little more of an edge to my voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I have a little bit more of, it's an edge. I'm not worried about editors. I'm not worried about how a newspaper editor might receive this or say, we can't run this or whatever they might do. It was just me putting it out there on my Facebook or my Instagram. And so they do have a little bit more of an edge. And I am a little bit more exasperated, you know, about the whole situation in the world. And I talk about it more freely now than I did before.
Yeah, and there's also the inclusion of the hashtag, right, for subtext.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I didn't understand hashtags, but it's so much fun to do those hashtags. You know, like hashtag white supremacy is the threat, you know, hashtag bar, you know, I'm like all these different hashtag, you know, flatten Trump. I had a lot of them. I had fun with the hashtags.
Yeah. I mean, it's also interesting because it's an evolution of those voices in a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So do you feel like the things that you are drawing now, you just said that you're not without the interruption of an editor, right?
Yeah.
there's a certain amount of freedom in what you can do now. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's a good feeling. It's a nice, I'm an awful speller. So I have to get either my husband or my son to read them before I put them out. And, I'm like, really? There's an I in that word? <It's> like, everything I do, anytime you see an original, you can believe there's going to be some whiteout somewhere because I had to fix something.
Thresholds is produced by Jordan Kistner and Drew Broussard. Music and editing by Laura Faye Osherwood of Arthur Moon. Our art is by Lorelei Grossman. Special thanks to our hosts at LitHub Radio. You can find more about our show, listen to past episodes, and get in touch at our website, thisisthresholds.com. Don't forget to rate and review our show at Apple Podcasts. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.